Kubota. We call it the Border Patrol because he rides the border of the property. So we call him the Border Patrol. And he'll go down to the shop and he'll see where I've been down there messing around with something. And he'll come in the door and he's got his hands in his pocket and he'll say, you've been down there welding? I say, yes, sir. And he says, well, you didn't roll my leads up right. You got my leads all messed up. And, you know, come down here and let me show you. I'm going to show you one more time. So he wants it rolled a certain way and this, that, and other, which I get it. He's, with his welding leads, he's pretty particular because he says you have to train them. You have to train the copper to lay right. And I know that sounds corny, but there's some truth to that. He has got them to where he rolls them in the floor in a perfect circle. And he just picks up the copper after he's, you know, the welding leads, after he rolls them in a perfect circle. And they just roll up so nice. I mean, just a perfect circle. So we replaced the leads a couple years ago with new copper. And every time he uses it, he trains the leads, he says. I'm training them to lay right. And if I stand in a certain spot and try to roll them on the floor, no, you got to stand right here. You got to do it just like this. I'm going to show you one more time, son. And I just, you know, I learned to trust him that he is right and that he has learned the hard way. So I do what he says because I know there's something there that I'm missing. KO4NUE.
Well, I want to know how many one more times he's going to show you. My dad always told me, he said, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. He said, you're supposed to listen twice as much as you talk. And I said, okay, Dad. Of course, then 20 minutes later, he'd have to go through the same thing again with me. But, you know, I remember Dad saying that to me when we were, we was out working on a car or something, I don't remember. And I didn't do something to suit him. And he says, God give you two ears and one mouth for a reason. I said, yes, sir, Daddy, he did. He was telling me, he says, you better listen to me this time, because I ain't telling you again.
And it gets to be reversed. And he struggles with that sometimes. I've got a car lift down there in the shop that we use to pick up cars because Dad can't. He can't bend down to do brakes anymore. So we went ahead and put a, you know, 11,000-pound lift in the shop so he could pick the stuff up. So when he does these oil changes or brakes, and me too, you don't have to bend down to do it. You know, you just pick the whole vehicle up. Well, I put a crane on the side of one of the lifting towers so you can kind of pick up, you know, a couple hundred pounds and swing it 180 degrees. And I told him after we put it in, I said, when you put the thing on the lift, you got to make sure the truck doors or car doors are closed because if you pick the lift up, it's going to hit the arm. And I've corrected him a couple of times to go down there and see the truck door open because he'll put it on the lift to change the oil in the truck. He'll get the vehicle up on the lift and then realize he's left the oil and filter in the back of the truck, in the back seat. So he'll let it down just enough to get the door open and get the oil and filters out, but he won't close the door. So here we go. He raises the door. Raises the lift, raises the vehicle up, and left the back door open on the truck. And it got pinned under the crane arm on the tower. Shattered the glass, bent the little, you know, the piece of metal that goes up at the top that receives the window. I mean, just messed it all up. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, just horrible. Somehow or another, that was my fault. I'm not quite sure how that was my fault. I guess because I put the crane on there, I guess. But and I just told him, I said, well, how many times do I have to tell you, Daddy? You got to close the door before you race the vehicle. He wasn't hearing it, though. It's still my fault, but that's okay. I'll take it.
Well, you know, I can understand his point his opinion to a point. You know, you shouldn't have put it on there. If he hadn't have put it on there, I wouldn't have busted that up like that. Oh, mate. But, well, my daddy didn't have any machinery like that. But he was something else as well. You know, I'll tell you about him some other time. But, you know, I miss my dad. I'm glad you still got yours, and I hope you have him around for a good long while yet to come. And when you see him, you tell him I said, howdy. I ain't never met the man yet, but one of these days I'll get to meet him, maybe.
He ought to meet. He's a Vietnam veteran. He was a welder in Vietnam. He welded up the boats. The PT boats for the Brownwater Navy and Mekong Delta. He had a welding barge there that they, you know, made all the repairs on. And then when the boats got shot up, they'd have to, you know, they'd go up the Mekong and weld a patch in the hull and then get the water out and bring the boat back to the dock for repairs there in the Delta. But he has got a bunch of pictures. He's got a whole photo album of his experience in Vietnam. And Gary, I got to tell you, him and one of his friends from Orangeburg, I forget his name, they caught a monkey somewhere there across the river, I think, and raised the thing and kept it there on the barge. So he's got pictures, I don't know how many pictures he's got of, you know, the barge and what he did and this, that, and the other. But he's got that monkey is always there in the picture. You know, daddy'd be welding and the monkey's sitting on his shoulder, or he's sitting on top of the welding machine or down in the hold or what, you know, whatever they're doing. He talks about that monkey all the time. I mean, all the time. So it's funny to hear his experiences, and the monkey kept him and the crew that he worked with as a four-man crew on the barge, and the monkey kept them in all kind of trouble because he would steal things. The monkey would go into the barracks during the day and steal trinkets, or sneak in the chow hall and steal spoons and forks and blah, blah, blah. He said he'd hide stuff everywhere, you know. Watches and spoons. He said he had some kind of addiction to the U.S. Army spoons that had the little loop in it at the back of it that they'd issued to the soldiers, because he could get his fingers in that hole on the back of the spoon. And he'd carry around three or four spoons on the barge, you know, just as happy as they could be, I guess, because they were shiny. But it's just funny to hear him talk about that monkey. And Heedy was the guy from Orangeburg. He had a dog. Daddy had a monkey, and Heedy had a dog. And they fought all the time. But it's just hilarious to hear him tell stories about that monkey and that dog. It just does me good to hear him tell those stories.
Oh, my goodness, I can imagine that. Remind me next time I see you in person to tell you about my cousin's experience with the monkey over there. You'll get a kick out of that, maybe. I don't know. But I won't say it over there. But hang on a minute there, Chad. Let me make one call, see if I got anybody else who wants to check in with us, and I'll come right back to you. Additional stations all the way through the alphabet for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS.
Net control. In WX4 Delta Alpha Tango. WX4DAT, whiskey, see, X-ray, 4, Delta Alpha Tango. You got new over in Gastonia, and just wanted to check in. Kind of late, so y'all have a good one. Got a new call sign.
DOS, please check in. Whiskey, Alpha 4, Kilo Charlie. 1, Mobile and Grimble. No traffic, no comment, but listening. 73.
4 DOS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'd like to say good evening to WX4DAT, Minister Danny up here in Gastonia. I appreciate you being with us tonight, Danny. I started writing down your call when you spoke, and you done changed your call on me, so it'll take me a day or two to get accustomed to that one. But congratulations on the new call. Appreciate you being with us tonight. And WA4KC, that's my buddy Juan, mobiling around Greenville tonight. Appreciate you being with us tonight, Juan. Tell Carolina and the rest of the family we said hello, and you be careful out there on the mobile. Tell Melvin I said hello. I hadn't heard him in a long time. Hope he's doing well. Hope you're doing well, too. Any others all the way through the alphabet before we go back to the racks? You call KI4DOS. DOS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with KO4NUE, Mr. Chad up there in Campobello. Chad, I tell you, you know, our dads have probably taught us a lot that we have forgotten, or you know, I keep running across things that Dad told me years and years ago, you know, and I'll do something stupid, and I said, well, Daddy told me not to do it that way, or something of that nature. I don't know if you do that or not.
All the time. I mean, that man has forgotten more than I will ever know, and I am ashamed to say that it has taken me to my 40s to realize that, and I've gotten to a point now to where I don't question what he tells me to do. If I'm in a situation in the shop that I don't know what to do, or if I'm fixing to do something wrong, and he says I wouldn't do that, then I don't get angry or upset. I just say, okay, well, you know, tell me what you're thinking. Tell me why you're saying that. And I can honestly say I don't recall a single time when it is a shop-related item like that I ever remember him being wrong, ever. I'm pretty sure I would remember that, but I just do not question it anymore. And that's, I think he's had the school of hard knocks as well, and has, you know, that has forced me to trust what he says, you know. But one other thing before I let you go, Gary, I know Duncan just wanted to check with you, give you a call about the antenna and all. But he was talking the other day about this monkey. I'll tell you one more thing about the monkey, and I'll let you go. Edie, his friend from Orangeburg, he got a dog because the monkey could not stand anybody else on the barge but Daddy. So he went and got a dog off of the streets there in Vietnam, a pup, and raised it and kept it in the barracks and on the barge to keep the monkey away from him. So Daddy wrote home, and Meemaw, his mother, sent him a rug to keep in front of the cot where he slept. And Daddy's got a couple pictures of his cot and the rug and this, that, and the other. We had mosquito nets over his cot. And the monkey would sleep in the mosquito net, on top of the mosquito net at night, while the dog slept at the edge of the cot on the rug that Meemaw sent him, his mama sent him. And during the night, the monkey, when things would settle down in the barracks, the monkey would would sneak and stalk off of that mosquito net and would sneak up behind the dog. Dog had a little stub tail, wasn't about 2-3 inches long. And he, Daddy said, he would grab that tail on that dog and churn it like a butter churn and just shake it. And it would just be the awfulest ruckus. It'd wake the whole barracks up. Everybody'd start raising cane and fussing because the monkey would scream at the dog. The dog would bark and scream at the monkey. So finally, the platoon sergeant said, okay, the monkey's got to go, or you're going to have to go take the monkey and start sleeping down in the barge. So Dad took his cot and all the mosquito net and all and set it up in the hold of the barge. So him and the monkey spent most of the deployment sleeping in that welding barge on the Mekong Delta with him and the monkey. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. But, Gary, I've enjoyed the QSO. Please tell Miss Joy I said hello, and I enjoyed the conversation. This is KO4NUE, and I will be clear, but I will be standing by. Have a good night, sir, and everybody on the net.
I think I'm going to get me one of them monkeys. Of course, I don't know what I'd do with it, with a monkey here with these two dogs. It'd probably drive the little one in the house crazy and go outside and ride the German Shepherd like a horse. I don't know. I don't believe I'd get me a monkey. That'd get me in trouble. But I will relay your message in there to Joey. I'm sure she heard you. She listens through the door because I got the door shut. But tell Miss Anna we said hello and enjoy the conversation, and we'll do it again there, young man. You take care. And we have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS. For comments, or is there anyone else that would like to make a comment? Call KI4DOS. We'll wrap it up this evening. Appreciate all you fine folks that checked in with me tonight. I'll put the net report into the computer and let it do its thing, and then I'll finish closing the net out. Got a grand total of 59 tonight. Appreciate each and every one of you that came in and checked in with me. Come back again tomorrow night. Mr. Matt, WG4MC, will be calling to the best of my knowledge. Give him a good dose of Rider's Cram. This is KI4DOS, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Thanks for all those folks checked in with us. We will now return the repeater to normal amateur use. 73, good night, God bless. This is KI4DOS clear.
4NUE, KO4PXB.
PXB, KO4NUE. Hey, Lloyd, how you doing tonight, bud?
Just thought I'd make a very key point, because my father's in the same situation you are, that he was, his things that he's done throughout his life that we will forget as we get older and when they pass away, to make sure you write it down in a journal. That way you have it to remember, and that, because it made a very key point for later on to where I can pass that on.
Point. I have actually done some of that with my grandfather. Granddad and Meemaw and Pappy, he passed away years ago. But he had some family recipes that he taught me when I was a teenager. Salt-cured ham, sugar-cured ham, sauerkraut, crock-made pickles, and let's see, turtle stew and some kind of jelly. I think it was elderberry, I think. He called them wild grapes, but elderberry jelly. And I wrote all that down years and years ago, the recipes. And we still salt cure ham every year in September, October time frame, because it takes three days per pound to totally cure. But my dad, he's so resounding with the way he, you know, teaches and instructed me over the years. As it stands right now my mind is still kind of sharp. I don't forget many lessons that he's taught me, because you gotta have some of those skills down here in the shop, and he's just a master at it. And you know, it's so simple in his mind sometimes. It's just, well, you gotta do this, this, and this. And when you get that done, until you get that done, nothing's gonna be right. And I just, kind of just drop my head and say, okay, well, I don't question it anymore. I just trust what he says, because he's just a wonderful man and just full of knowledge, and a really good teacher, too. So, you're right. I get it.
I also probably want to put in that journal your wife's birthday and anniversary. I lucked out when Mary and Tracy, because her birthday is November the 11th, Veterans Day, and we got married on New Year's Day, so it's pretty much impossible to forget those 2 days.
Yeah, I'm just not good with dates. I don't know what it is. I just cannot remember them. I just get so distracted sometimes that I just, she's got her iPhones figured out where she can tell the iPhone to remind us when it's anniversary or a birthday or something like that, it reminds, she's got mine set up so that it reminds me the day before, so that I've got some reaction time to where I can, go get in a truck and, get what I need or this, that, and the other. And Valentine's Day is the worst. It is the worst. And I just don't matter how hard I try sometimes, it just goes right over my mind. So she's okay with it. We might celebrate her birthday in January, even though it's in March. Or we might celebrate our wedding anniversary in February when it's in October. And, so she's okay with it. She just takes it right in stride, So, as long as you remember, it don't matter what month it is, just, whatever. So I'm okay with that. We're happy with it.
Backtracking on what you mentioned about monitoring the power that was coming from different repeaters, can you explain that a little more? I understand repeaters put out different wattage, and so explain that a little bit more if you can.
Can you clarify the question, Lloyd? And if I don't know how to answer, we'll get somebody who can help you with it. But see if you can clean the question up just a little bit.
Like I said, we talk on this frequency, on this repeater, and you mentioned the, I think it's 190, that to be mindful of, I guess, how short the coax is that I've got going to the antenna, actually to the radio. So that's, I guess, hope that clears it up a little bit.
The question is regarding length of coax and amount of power loss when transmitting. Is that correct?
Does that, I guess, is it still standard on, regardless of what frequency and repeater you're talking on, or is that, will that also vary?
Before JBQ. Are you in there, Larry?
JBQ. Hello, Chad. Hello, Lloyd.
For NUE, let me make sure I got it. Larry taught me this lesson not too awful long ago about power out and the proper type of transmission path, and he is a master at teaching it. I know the answer to this question, but I am going to defer to him because of how well he can teach it. So I'll turn it over to Larry, KK4JBQ and KO4PXB, KO4NUE. I'll be standing by.
KK4JBQ. Lloyd, I don't mean to imply that I didn't. I wasn't listening. I was listening. But I want you to phrase the question again and be as specific to your issues as you can be, because I don't want to answer the question like I was talking to somebody else. I want to answer the question the way you will understand it. Okay? So ask the question again, please.
KO4PXB, when that Chad gave me that cable antenna, he mentioned to get the, do not get the coax too short for, because of power loss. So that's what I was having explained to me.
Well then, let's go at it this way. How does the length of the coax affect the transmission of power? The simplest way to understand that is to bring in a way of looking at the loss of power through coax, actually through practically anything. But with coax, it's engineered to be quite specific to the type of coax that you might use and the length. It does involve some math, I'm afraid. What we will call this, what it is called, is the velocity factor of the coax. So we understand that the power traveling over the coax is alternating current. Not direct current, but alternating current. And it's traveling at the speed of light. The speed of light through a vacuum is what we all, you know, the number that we all memorized. But how about through other substances? The speed of light through air is different because it is encountering some resistance there. The speed of light through a substance like glass will cause, on the other side of a sunny window, the room to get warm. Why is that? Because the speed of light is slowed down and the energy is absorbed by the glass and is given off to the room inside. Other factors change, but we're just talking about the speed of light. So through coax, there is a velocity factor associated with every particular coax that you might use. And then there's also an effect which will depend on the diameter of the coax. It might be, understandable, you know, see to your pants, that if you have a real tiny little coax like RG-174, it's about is the size of, paracord. It's quite small. And it's constructed the same way. It has an outer sheath. It has an inner braid. It has an insulator between the braid and the center conductor. It's constructed the same way other coax is, but it's very small. It's very light. It winds easily. It bends easily. So it has its place, but not on a long transmission run. And I think the way you expressed the question, let me let this drop for a second. The way you expressed the question, you have one thing kind of switched around there. To connect your antenna with your rig, a shorter length of coax is a more effective and better connection. You don't want your coax to be all coiled up outside because you've got excess in a 50-foot coil of coax. You had extra, so you just leave it laying on the concrete. Believe me, I've done that and then realized my error. You want that coax to be as short as it can be to go to your antenna. So you have less loss in that effect. It has less length of the resistance that the coax will offer to the transmission of the alternating current. The velocity factor is, some amount of the figure one. So really good coax is going to be like 0.97%. And really lossy coax is going to be like 0.4%. Really lossy, really thin in the long run, and you lose a lot of power before it ever gets to your antenna. This is critical to keep in mind. It really is. It's why some people will choose a really thick coax to go a short run. They want as much power delivered as efficiently as possible to the antenna at the feed point. And when it leaves the feed point, then the antenna can do what it does. It radiates. So now I'm going to ask you if you understood the answer as I explained it, or do I need to do something else? KK4JBQ.
Yes, sir. I understood that very clear. So I have a 10, probably it's just under 10 feet, and like I said, it's coiled up, but it's inside, so it's not laying on anything outside of concrete, and nothing of the antenna parts touching metal, like Chad asked.
Well, there's all sorts of tricks you can do with coax. You've probably heard the expression ugly balun. Well, what's a balun? Well, the antenna will be a balanced circuitry. Let's speak of a dipole. Both sides of the dipole are equal. And when you consider the coax that connects the dipole to your rig, the coax is not equal. The center conductor and the braid offer two very different images to the alternating current. They're very different. So that's unbalanced. Coax is unbalanced. Your antenna is balanced. What do you do about that? Well, you work around that in some way. The best way to achieve that, especially with extreme cases, the best way is to interject a bit of a transforming device to take balanced to unbalanced back and forth, because this being alternating current, you have current going up to the antenna, and what's not radiated will try to come back down the antenna, and it'll come right back into the shack, and it'll do some strange things depending on what's in the area. If you touch a metal part of your rig, it might give you a tingle in your finger. If you have a computer nearby, it might cause the screen to do floppy things. That's RF back in the shack. And you can take care of that with a, the name of it is, what should I say? A choke. It chokes off the return of RF back into the shack. And that is a transforming device. It's a 1-to-1. The ratio is 1-to-1. But it doesn't allow anything to come back in the shack. It's choked off right there. it's got to go somewhere, so it tries to go back up toward the antenna, and if it does, makes the antenna a little bit more effective. And then, the next time you have a cycle, and we're talking about frequencies, that's another cool thing. The frequencies that we operate on are millions of times a second, megahertz, millions of times a second. So you want as much power to radiate out of your antenna as possible. Having a choke ballon at, near your rig, not on the inside if you go through a wall or something, you want it to be outside. But somewhere around 5 feet away from your connection to your rig, a nice choke ballon will make your antenna more efficient because it doesn't allow that RF back into the shack, and you don't want it back in there anyway. These things are, they're real. They can be thought of as, the effects that electricity has, but this is effects that are in the real world, and you can get a concept of that in your brain if you think about it. RF, Rick argued with me. RF will try to go out through the antenna, but can't because of the unbalanced situation, comes back towards you. The choke will say, no, you can't go into the shack, and it sends it back on up to the antenna again. All right, that's probably more than you asked for, but there you are, KK4JBQ.
Comment. NUE. Lloyd, so here's my observations with what Larry and Gary and Walt taught me months ago about this. To understand this a little better, I took the 50 feet of coax, RG58 and RG8, and some other type of unbranded coax. And I put a watt meter at the end of it to measure at the end of the 50 feet run, and set my radio for 50 watts at 50 feet. With the unbranded coax, when I put 50 watts into that coax and measured it at the end of the coax at a 146, this frequency, 146 million cycles per second, megahertz, over half of my power was lost. So my radio was putting out 50 watts. But because the coax was so lossy and so cheap, that over 50% of my power was lost. So I was had 50 watts on the radio, but only 28 or 29 watts was actually getting to the end of the run. When I switched coax to the RG58, it was a little better. Not much better, but a little better. But when I switched to RG8, at this frequency, I got not 100%. I don't think you'll ever get 100%. It's always going to be loss. But I got close to 40 watts, 42 watts, something like that, out of the back of my radio. It was that critical. So to break this down so you kind of see here, I am assuming that your little J-pole that I made you out of ladder line, you have got your radio plugged straight into the bottom of it, and you are sitting in a chair beside the blinds, and you were talking out of your handy straight into that J-pole. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Because you're trying to determine what kind of coax and what length of coax I need to use to make that connection. Is that correct?
Now, when I got the adapters that you mentioned, I went ahead and got it's probably either less than 10 feet piece of coax that has the end connectors on the end of it that's about the diameter of a pencil, but it was rated very well.
So what that means is, at 10 feet, well, let's say it's 50 feet, your handy is going to put out probably 5 watts, maybe 7. Some of them are 7 watts, some of them maybe even 10. But I'm assuming yours is probably 5 to 7 watts. So if you use RG58 or some unbranded coax, and you key the mic at 50 feet, half of that is going to get to the antenna. Half of it. So you're losing half of your power by having a piece of, you know, junk coax. So that's why when I sent you the antenna and we talked on the phone, I made a suggestion that you use the shortest amount of coax that you need. You know, add 2 or 3 feet to it so you can move around a little bit. Don't get 100 feet and hook it up and expect to be all hunky-dory, because the longer that run is, the more you lose. So just to put it into perspective, at 50 feet, at 5 watts, when you've hit the push-to-talk button, only 2.5 watts are going out of your antenna, and that's considerable. And that's what Larry's talking about, velocity factor. You lose that in length of coax. So here's my suggestion. RG8, a short run, and buy 2 PO259 connectors and solder them on yourself so that you can cut the antenna to the shortest of the transmission, the coax to the shortest length possible, so you can still move around. That way, when you put 7 watts out, you get as close to that 7 watts going to the repeater as possible. Now, you're making the repeater just fine. There's a little bit of noise, but that's expected with a handy. But where that's going to be critical is something like simplex or a further antenna away, or a further repeater that's away. You want as much of that radio wattage to go out the antenna as possible. And you do that by choosing the right coax at the shortest length, keeping in mind that loss going out is also loss coming in. So keep that in mind, especially when you consider simplex. Am I on right? Am I on target, Larry? KO4NUE.
You're really on target there. It is important, boy, to consider the frequency. There are tables that you can consult. The feed line signal loss, that would be a good search term. Feed line signal loss, and if one of the results gives you a table, I'd print that out, carry it with you. very helpful. So I'm consulting a table that I've got here on a laminated sheet in the shack. And at 146 megahertz, which is what we're talking about, the RG8 is about 67% efficient. So that would be 33% loss. I think that adds up. 67% efficient. Now, you don't get better than that until you get to much larger coax, LMR 600. That's crazy, but that's true. LMR 600 is about 80% efficient, so only 20% loss. There will always be some loss. That velocity factor is what I'm talking about. and it has to do with the resistance or the impedance, which is a kind of resistance, the impedance to the flow of electrons within the wire. To impede something is to hold it back, you know. So that's what impedance is all about. But at RF frequencies, it behaves in a particular way that that has some characteristics that you'll get to know. And impedance is not a scary word. KK4JBQ.
KO4PXB. Here's the next question, a part of that. Because remember studying for the ham radio test, that the losses actually converted to heat. Obviously that heat's also just dissipated throughout the line as by the just natural layer of the temperature, correct? And I guess at what point of that heat really affects your signal going out, if that makes any sense?
I can take that, Chad. KK4JBQ. Yes. It's one of Newton's laws. It might be the first law of thermodynamics. Energy is never lost. It will, in this case, when encountering impedance or resistance to flow, energy will convert directly to heat. Yes. A nice fluffy snow will never stick to coax. Because it's always a little bit warmer than air temperature. It'll always convert the snow to water. If it's inefficient and you're losing power, you're losing radiating power, the loss will convert to some other form of energy. Heat is a form of energy. Yeah. So what you're thinking right, KK4JBQ.
Like this, to learn this on your own and to digest it, because we've spent some time together and I know how your mind thinks and how it works. So to learn this on your own to see or to verify what Larry is telling you. When you order your coax, or next time you get on Amazon, and some people are going to argue with this a little bit, that's okay. Amazon has got a little handheld SWR meter and a power meter. Forget the name of it. It's a little 2-inch box. It's not super accurate. It's not all that. But it's $10 or $12, okay? And it's rough. It's a rough gauge. You hook your coax to your handy, and then you put the power meter at the antenna and the feed line. Do not transmit unless it's hooked up. And then turn your handy to maximum output, which is, let's say, 5 watts. And then key the mic. And see, you know you're putting out 5 watts, but measure it at the end of the antenna as it goes into the antenna and see what is actually getting to the antenna. And it's probably going to be around 3 to 4 watts, maybe at a 10-foot run. That sounds close. And the next thing you're going to think is, this is awful. I mean, I've got my radio cranked up to max wattage, and I'm only getting like 3 or 4 watts at the antenna. Well, that's the way it is. And you're going to have to learn, because I know what you're thinking. I know how low it is. I'm going to get it just perfect. No. Not going to happen. Mr. Newton's not going to let that happen. You have to be willing to accept what you get. You do the best you can do, and by the best coefficients that you can buy, and you accept what it is. One of those is going to be output power that you're going to have to accept. You can control it a little bit. And SWR, that's going to be another one that you're going to go, oh, no, I got to get it perfect. Nope, nope. Get it as close as you can get it and let it ride. And that's just the way it is. Am I off target, Larry? KO4NUE, KK4JBQ, KO4PXV.
I think you're right, Chad. I prefer to think about things as simply as I can. Chad introduced SWR. That stands for standing wave ratio. It might even be a misnomer. That is to say that what we call this is not actually what it is, but it's close enough to get an understanding in the real world. The ratio of the radiated signal versus the signal loss and the signal, therefore, that is also reflected back down the coax into the shack. So we do that in a ratio. 1:1 is perfect. No loss because of an imbalance, an imbalance of impedance. When we use a PL259 and an SO239 combination to make a connection, one plugs into the other. Those connectors have a characteristic impedance. Believe it or not, it isn't 50 ohms. You would think it is, but it's not. It's closer to 75 ohms. It's about 74. The PL259, and coax for that matter, was adopted to amateur use just after World War II. Coax became used first in the military, and then it, of course, came into civilian use after the war. And here in the United States, the PL259, SO239 combination became very popular, so every rig you buy has an SO239 on the back. So what are you going to screw into that? But those connectors are 75 ohm. There are what is called a constant impedance, a constant characteristic impedance connectors that are 50 ohms. The BNC connector is 50 ohms. The N connector is 50 ohms. So those connectors are used in very critical applications such as repeaters. I mean, you want to get every ounce of power out of a repeater. And you don't mind the extra cost or the extra inconvenience. You'll notice that QRP radios, low power radios, have BNC connectors. That's a constant impedance traveling from the radio, through the connector, through the coax. It's all 50 ohms. You might hear the phrase, so there is a little bump, a little change of impedance. When you go out of the radio through a PL259, there's a little impedance change there. But it goes right back into 50 ohms, and the effect, unless you pile up a bunch of these things, as sometimes people do, to go from, you know, one type of connector to another, they have to use adapters, you know. And you can have those strung along several inches, and that will have a profound effect, several inches of connectors to go from one type to another. I've seen some that are 3 inches long. Well, what Chad is suggesting here, that we all consider this a bit of a price. There's a price to be paid, and to get the job done any way you do it. If you use a nice carpenter's saw, maybe a back saw, it makes a smoother cut than a chainsaw, you know, to make the same cut. So there's a little price to be paid if you want something as quick as a chainsaw. Do the planning as carefully as you can and as convenient to your situation as you can. And all of this will make sense in time. If it's starting to get a little blurred, it did to me at first as well. But it all starts to make sense. Everything is acting the same way, no matter what changes you make. It'll always act the same because it's acting characteristically. Coax will always act the same. And oh, by the way, what could be the most efficient feed line you could use? It would be ladder line. Or because that is not an imbalanced, that is balanced line. The connector going one way and the other way up to the antenna and back, those are the same in ladder line. It's just a piece of copper. But it can be as efficient as 94% on 2 meters. It's a lot less efficient to work with. Ladder line can't come close to metal. It can't lay on the ground. We use coax because it's convenient. KK4 JBQ.
KO4 NUE. So Larry, the antenna that I made for him, Gary donated 400 ohm ladder line. So he has a Slim Jim made out of ladder line that he's got hanging on the window to, you know, get around HOA. So the antenna is as efficient as it's the most efficient material he can use. But Lloyd, let me give you a suggestion for your coax with the handy if you're still in here. So the ladder line is hanging on the blinds inside the house so nobody can see it. And you've got the handy plugged straight into it. So to determine your length, look around the room and find the most comfortable chair you can. And the distance from the antenna to that chair to where you can be comfortable and relax and listen to the net, that needs to be your coax length. As plainly as I can say. Now, when you get a different radio with a lot more power, like a little mobile rig or something, okay, then focus on, don't misconstrue this. Focus on getting a precise transmission path. But just for now, what I did, this is what I did now. May not be right, but this is what I did. How do I determine my coax length? Okay, and that's what I did. From my antenna to that chair, to where I can enjoy leisurely conversation and be comfortable, that is what determined my coax length. And Larry, I take a gamble and say, you have done the same thing. Am I correct?